Welcome to a meeting of the Cabinet on Monday the 14th of February at 6:30. Apologies to any of your other halves who are missing out on their Valentine's evening. Item number one then is to receive apologies for your absence.
We've received apologies for absence.
Thank you. Item two, any declarations of interest? Okay. So item number three then is to approve as a correct record the public minutes of the meeting held on the 17th of January 2022. Those minutes have been circulated. I would like to propose that we accept those as a correct record. May I have a seconder, please? Councillor Ashcroft, are there any comments queries on the minutes? No. In which case, I'll go to the vote on that then. So, all those in favour? Okay, that's unanimous from voting members this evening. Okay. So that takes us on to item number four, which is to consider any urgent business to meeting under Rule 12. Any urgent business. So on to item number five, which is the forward plan. Chief Executive.
Thank you, Leader. This is the forward plan from the 1st of February through to the 31st of May this year. Happy to take any questions on the forward plan.
Thank you. Do you not have any questions on No? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, that takes us then to item number six, which is the medium-term financial strategy 22-23 through to 24-25. And I will pass to Lisa Turner to present.
Thank you, Leader. So I do have a presentation. Thank you very much. So this is the medium-term financial strategy for the period 2022-23 through to 2024-25. This is to consider the MTFS for that period, but also to highlight financial challenges and risks for 22-23 and beyond. So we start with the background. The council was impacted by unprecedented funding reductions to core central funding from government of 78% or 6.4 million on a like-for-like basis between 2010 and 2019. The original base budget for 22-23 onwards was balanced from one-off resources, with financial planning taking place during a period of significant uncertainty and volatility. However, local government finance reforms, which were a big part of that uncertainty, have once again been deferred, resulting in continued uncertainty in the medium term. However, despite these challenges, our strategic approach has enabled a budget to be presented that outlines significant investment in the borough and our collective priorities, protects services, and at the same time presents a balanced budget. In terms of the provisional settlement for 22-23 from central government, this was significantly more positive than had been expected widely within the sector. However, despite a spending review covering multiple years, the settlement itself only covered 1 year, 22-23. However, the new homes bonus allocation of 1.043 million for next financial year, alongside the legacy payment for 1920 meant a total allocation of 1.533 million for the scheme, However, as we'll see inside later, no further legacy payments are attached to this scheme, which will create significant uncertainty going forward. There was a new grant introduced, and the 22-23 services grant introduced, and for this council, that amounted to 0.221 million. The lower tier services grant, which was previously introduced for the current financial year, within the council's allocation, grant floor was removed, so effectively losing around 0.5 million of funding in that regard. The council tax referendum limits for shire districts such as ourselves are set at 2% or £5, whichever is higher. So the net result in terms of the way the government liked to measure the settlement or spending power was an increase of 1.8% compared to a national average of 6.9% and an average for shire districts of 4.3%. Now, the government did set out a commitment to the local government finance reforms, but no specific timescale for implementation has been established. However, further information is expected in the spring. The settlement itself was finalised actually last week, with only minor amendments for council. So what the graph on screen does illustrate that core spending power change in the provisional settlement, illustrating there that those authorities specifically with social care responsibilities received a significantly more higher increase in core spending power, but also more demands in that regard than the average for shire districts, for example, with the Staffordshire allocation being significantly lower. And then to illustrate the new homeless bonus grant and how that has fluctuated across the years, this is demonstrated on screen, and there you can see for 23-24 there is a high degree of uncertainty with no legacy payments attached to the scheme, and uncertainty as we move forward in terms of whether the scheme will continue, and if it does, in what form. So that leads us to a summary of the MTFS position, and what you can see on screen from paragraph 8.1 of the report is that the budget for next financial year has been balanced with a one-off sum of just shy of £500,000, so £461,000, being allocated on a temporary basis to the town's fund. And then as we look ahead, 23-24 and 24-25, the budget is balanced from windfall business rates resources that are held in reserves. Now, the key assumptions that have been taken into account within those figures are outlined in section 10 of the report. It does assume a council tax increase of £5 for 22-23 onwards, and of course is very much subject to the outcome and the timing of the local government reforms that I've already mentioned, and also on continued uncertainty around the financial impact of COVID-19 as we move forward. In terms of key budget changes, these are set out in the report, but during the course of the year, around autumn 2021, the council has conducted a budget consultation, and the outcome of that consultation has been at the forefront when developing the strategy. Paragraph 9.3 sets out a schedule of service investment and growth that has impacted on the budget, totaling £1 million. And paragraph 9.5 sets out a schedule of savings and service income totaling £1.5 million. There are core funding changes totaling around £3.1 million due to a number of factors, including that deferral of the local government finance reforms set out in paragraph 9.6 of the report. And again, at paragraphs 9.4 and 9.7, it sets out a number of significant changes that have affected the budget forecast or beyond 22-23. However, what the report does highlight is that there is that significant uncertainty for 23-24 onwards due to the local government finance reforms that are planned. And this is demonstrated at paragraph 8.3 onwards. In terms of the capital programme, this is outlined at section 13 and detailed at appendix C to the report. And it sets out quite an extensive capital programme up to 2025-26, totalling 43.8 million, which is set out in line with our corporate priorities. This includes 37.6 million in relation to the Burton Towns Fund, as well as CCTV and cemeteries infrastructure, business and community regeneration grant schemes, support for the Utoxeter Sports Hub, and provision for electric vehicle charging points, continued support for disabled facility grants, as well as a range of departmental bids, including some ICT investment. And then finally, plans around the Utoxeter Master Plan will be brought forward in due course. Section 11 of the report does outline a number of risks that are attached to the medium-term financial strategy, and some of the key ones there are outlined on screen. Obviously, the most significant of which I've highlighted in relation to the local government finance reforms, but also we have seen significant impacts around due to COVID-19 on some of our income streams. Of course, the budget does estimate continued impact, but obviously that we could continue to see some volatility in that regard, as well as things like demand for supported housing. And the council received significant income during the course of the year, and we do see some volatility around that. Of course, we do have put measures in place to mitigate those risks. And then that brings us on to reserves, which in the current climate are a fundamental indicator of financial resilience. The MTFS sets out or proposes that the minimum working balance will remain at 1.3 million, consistent with the current financial year. There is a forecast for the earmark reserve set out at Appendix B to the report, and a continuation of the policy to only use reserves for one-off purposes, with a positive statement from the Chief Finance Officer over the level and adequacy of reserves. There are a couple of sections within that part of the report setting aside 150,000 to support capital feasibility or regeneration stroke spend to save initiatives to be allocated through delegated authority, and again some reallocation of reserves in line with the latest priorities and demands. So really, to finalise and sum up, as well as supporting the continued delivery and improvement of our existing services, the medium-term financial strategy makes provision for significant investment in the borough. Subject to the assumptions made and the risks highlighted within the report, and acknowledging that both the planned reforms to local government finance, demand for supported housing, and the pandemic have created a high degree of uncertainty and our money, the budget provides a robust basis for managing the council's finances, period. Although it does highlight that subject to the outcome of those reforms, savings are likely to be delivered in the medium term in order to reduce reliance on one-off resources in order to ensure financial sustainability in the medium to long term. So for members to note the extent of the financial uncertainties and associated risks ahead, and that the budget for 22-23 is balanced, enabling one-off funding to be allocated on a temporary basis towards the town's fund. And that leads me on to the recommendation, which Cabinet is asked to recommend to the council approval of the medium-term financial strategy outlined in the report for 22-23 to 24-25, which includes the revenue budget, capital programme, asset management and capital strategy, and that the level and appropriateness of reserves be noticed. I'm happy to take any questions through you, Leader.
Lisa, thank you very much. In these presentation, and I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank you for your and indeed the team for your assistance in putting strategy together in, as you've indicated there, some very difficult and challenging circumstances. So this is obviously one of two formal decision points on a strategy that obviously we've collectively been working on since November. So I don't propose personally to go into a lot more specific detail this evening, but I am very pleased that we have been able to put a strong MTFS together, which, as you've stated, invests in our priorities around regeneration, climate change, electric charging, CCTV, tourism and business and community support, whilst also continuing to deliver our core services to a high standard. So I will open up to any other members who have any comments or questions. Councillor Thorpe.
Thank you, Rita. Not any questions, but just a few comments in terms of where we are on our portfolio. Over the last 12 months, we've actually delivered a new fleet of refuse collection vehicles. And we're still waiting for some of that fleet to be delivered, which are the electric ones. We are ahead of our climate change plan in terms of replacing vehicles with electric vehicles. And I'm really pleased to announce that our decision to go with an English provider for our main fleet of RCVs, Hester Dennis Eagle, pay dividends because they are the only company that delivered on time in terms of our fleet deliveries, whereas the companies with regard to the electric fleet are international companies and didn't have the foresight that Dennis Eagle had in terms of putting in stocks and stores of spare parts and parts for the manufacturing of vehicles in place so they could actually deliver their promises on time. Unfortunately, the foreign companies were not able to do that and didn't have that foresight. Also, within this year's MTFS, we have been able to take advantage of the new contract that we've signed up for this year in terms of dry recycling and with regard to our garden waste contracts. And I'm pleased to say that the team have worked very, very hard in terms of coming together with these agreements and these contracts, which have made a significant contribution to our MTFS. And the fact that we've worked hard in terms of the messaging on dry recycling and our contamination now is much better than it was, and the prices we're getting for our dry recycling are far better than they were, and all contributing to the MTFS being in a balanced position.
Very much indeed. Councillor Ashworth.
Just a couple of points for my portfolio regarding the MTFS. The importance of tourism is huge, and I'm really grateful that we're actually managing to look at that. The other thing I'm really, really pleased with is the Utoxeter Sports Hub. I know this has been an aspiration for many members for a long time, so I'm really pleased that we're actually managed to push that forward. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you, Leader. Yes, I'd just like to thank Bev for taking special interest in Utoxeter Sports Hub. It's been something that we've struggled to get off the ground for many years, and now our commitment in partnership with Staffs FA, I hope we'll hopefully see that sports hub finally take a start on site in the next couple of years, which is really exciting for people in Utoxeter. In terms of my own portfolio, Well, I think it's hard. I struggle to find my favourite part, because not only is the capital fund vastly different to what it was last year, massive investment as a result of government's commitment to level up towns such as Burton, but we've also found room to employ a new head of service that will focus on regeneration and will really move the authority into the next gear so we can make the most of yet more regeneration funds that we know are coming from the government in the next few years. Another commitment to fund business springboard boost funding, another 100,000 to local businesses. This last year's fund has been really good. We've managed to leverage double the amount of money that we've put into it from the private sector. And we'll do that over the next year again. And then the new fund called Local Regeneration Fund, which is much needed, which will help fund much needed local community projects, which I hope members, local members, board members be able to highlight and raise and bring to the panel over the next year. Again, an entirely new fund that we've managed to find money for, so all through this MTFF, and not a great impact on reserves either. So I'm very, very pleased with the MTFF, many, many other things and other portfolios as well, but very happy with mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to propose a recommendation that we recommend to Council approval of the medium-term financial strategy 22-23 to 24-25, which includes the revenue budget, capital programme and the asset management and capital strategy, and that the level and appropriateness for reserves be noted. Can I have a second? Councillor Allen, thank you. All those in favour? Okay, that's unanimous from voting members. Thank you very much. Okay, that takes us on then to item number 7, which is establishment of the Staffordshire Leaders Board and Chief Executive.
Thank you, Leader. This report seeks agreement to ESBC's participation in the Staffordshire Leaders Board on the basis of the terms of reference set out at Appendix 1 of the report, as well as the appointment of yourself, Leader, as the borough's representative and a named cabinet member, a substitute. At the December 2021 meeting of the informal Staffordshire-wide leaders group, the meeting discussed partnership working amongst councils and the appropriateness of a county deal with government, which it was hoped would provide additional powers and funding, including in relation to climate change, waste, the economy, improving public services and health inequalities. The leaders then went on to set out priorities and a remit, which are mentioned at paragraphs 2.1 and 2.6 of the report. The main conclusion was that the informal networking, which has happened over many years amongst the 8 districts and county council, needs to be put on a more formal footing, hence this paper, which is also going to other councils across Staffordshire. Later on down the line, there is also the ability to admit Stoke City Council into these arrangements if they so wish. Finally, scrutiny of this approach will need to be undertaken locally in consultation with the chairs of scrutiny at ESBC. So, Leader, the recommendations are listed at paragraph 9 for Cabinet's consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. So I think what this demonstrates is just a step on collaborative working. So since 2019, our relationship with Staffordshire County Council in particular has significantly improved. And over the same time frame, we have worked and engaged with our neighbouring districts and boroughs in seeking opportunities around sharing of knowledge and expertise, and also looking for opportunities for shared working where they exist. And obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic has brought many awful things, but it's actually brought, in terms of this set of relationships, it's actually brought a great deal of improved strength and improved working together. So really the formation of this leaders board will just allow us to come together more formally and work together in a slightly more formal fashion, and give us the capability to discuss future possible opportunities with central government. So do members have any questions? That's right.
Not a question, just a comment really. I think it's really good that we are now formalising a much stronger working relationship with other Staffordshire districts and Staffordshire County Council. There's lots of lessons that we can learn from other districts in the county, and there's lots of partnership working that we've already demonstrated in the last 2 years with the county. And I think we should, this is the first, very, very early stages of what may become a more formal working arrangement with other districts, but it just proves that the world doesn't stop at the end of East Staffordshire borders, and I'm very happy to support it.
Thank you. Okay, in which case I would like to propose the recommendations as set out in section 9, so that is to agree the establishment of the Borough Council's participation in the Staffordshire Leaders Board on the basis of the terms of reference as set out in Appendix 1 of the report. To appoint myself as the Borough Council's representative on the Leaders Board, and to appoint Councillor George Allen as the substitute for myself on the Leaders Board. I have a second for that proposal. Councillor Faulkner, thank you. All of those in favour? Okay, that's unanimous from voting members. Thank you very much. Okay, which takes us on then to item number 8, which is the Cannock Chase Special Area of Conservation Developer Contributions. And Philip Stevenson is this evening, and I'll hand over to Philip to present, please. Good evening, Philip.
Thank you very much. This report is about the Cannock Chase Special Area of Conservation Developer Contributions. So in the 2015 local plan, we have a policy, detailed policy 11, which sets out that contributions will need to be made within a 15-kilometre sort of radius of the Cannock Chase area. What we have been doing, based on the report that we had at the time, was collecting contributions within a 8-kilometre zone. But over the last couple of years, we've had a fresh report which says that based on the next plan period, going forward from now, we're going to need to up the amount of contributions to pay for the impacts on the SAC from new development. So we're looking to increase the contribution zone from 8 kilometres to 15 kilometres, which is the maximum that we have set out in the local plan. The local plan hasn't changed, and obviously we consulted on it at the time, but we decided at that time to hold back from charging for the full area, whereas that is what this report is about, essentially, that we need to increase the amount as more gets built to pay for those remedial actions to improve biodiversity in the SAC.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Allen.
Thank you, Leader. So essentially this is about recognising that local people use Cannock Chase. Toxteter is a lot closer to it, and that is within the 15-kilometre zone. It's more so for that south and east, south and west part of the borough that use Cannock Chase. I use it quite a lot, living quite close to it, I enjoy going around exploring, and I know of a lot of other residents that do. But essentially, this is about recognising that the more houses that are built, the harm from people visiting Cannock Chase needs to be mitigated. So the more houses that are built, the more money that will flow into Cannock Chase, which is a special area of conservation.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, in which case I would like to propose the recommendations as set out at section 11. So that is that the new developer contribution charge of £290 per dwelling unit is put into effect from the 12th of April 2022 to mitigate impacts on the SAC for new residential proposals in the Staffordshire Borough Council within a 15-kilometre zone of influence from the Cannock Chase Special Area of Conservation. and that delegated authority is given to the deputy leader in consultation with the planning manager to agree and sign the revised Carrick-Chase SAC Memorandum of Understanding and to agree and sign the final version of the draft financial agreement on behalf of East Staffordshire Borough Council, following on from the Carrick-Chase SAC Memorandum of Understanding being entered into. Do I have any second? To Councillor Allen, thank you. All those in favour? Okay, that's unanimous from voting members. Thank you very much indeed, Philip. We shall let you go.
Thank you.
Of course, welcome to stay if you wish. Okay, item number 9 then is the Climate Change Action Plan, first year review of progress. And Mark Jeffcoat is going to take us through it.
Okay, thank you. The purpose of this report is primarily to present progress with the Climate Change Action Plan, but secondly to recommend that the current Climate Emergency Declaration is extended to become a Climate and Ecological Emergency Declaration. So in terms of the Climate Change Action Plan itself, the plan contains 57 actions. Progress can be summarised as follows. We have 39 green actions, 36 of those are ongoing and 3 are complete. None of the actions are amber, 4 of the actions are red, and 14 of the actions are shaded out grey on the basis that they're not yet due to start. The paper contains 6 paragraphs of notable activities that have taken place across the council in the last year. In terms of the 4 red actions, first one is to refresh the climate change strategy. And we can't do that until we have a greenhouse gas emissions baseline figure for the council buildings, which is indeed the second red action. And we're currently in the process of trying to obtain data from the corporate energy provider, Total Gas and Power, on energy consumption within our buildings. And that's progressing well. And we have decided to choose the existing financial year as the base year for monitoring progress going forward. But the third red action is the elimination of single-use plastics wherever possible within 12 months. This is an administrative change. We need to bring in line the target date within the Climate Change Action Plan to reflect that of the motion that was carried by the council during July. And the final red action is communications. We have been doing climate change communications for the last 6 months, but we haven't managed to finalise the plan. So for all 4 of those red actions, we're simply asking to move the target date slightly. In terms of the action plan next steps, we need to undertake a gap analysis to assess whether or not the actions contained within the plan will meet our carbon neutral by 2040 aspirations. Add or remove actions as necessary, and then establish the amount of carbon offsetting necessary to offset any unavoidable emissions, which will be inevitable, and then place an indicative cost on some of the individual actions. That information will come forward with the next Climate Change Action Plan Progress Report. In terms of the second part of the paper, it's to do with the Ecological Emergency Declaration. The purpose of this is to strengthen the Council's response to the local, national and global loss of biodiversity. There will be service implications for the authority across planning, community and open spaces and the council's procurement activity. These implications are described in the report. Declaring an ecological emergency will require the following commitments from the council. To include additional actions to protect and enhance biodiversity in the renamed Climate Change and Ecology Action Plan, to develop a joint climate change and ecology strategy, to work in partnership across the borough, and also to secure grant funding where necessary to deliver actions. So in terms of the overall report recommendations, it's recommended that Cabinet note the overall positive progress with the Climate Change Action Plan, make the minor changes to the target dates as described, that the Climate Emergency Declaration is extended to a Climate and Ecological Emergency Declaration, and that this progress report is brought forward on an annual basis at the end of each financial year rather than calendar year, as is the case with this report. Thank you.
Mark, thanks very much indeed. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you. So on a personal level, I think biodiversity is mitigating against the impacts of the way we all live nowadays is more important, I think, than climate change. And that's why I'm very happy to support an addition to the Climate Change Action Plan and to declare an ecological emergency. It's also why we are, in the next few weeks, going to form a biodiversity group, which will help inform guidance and develop guidance to give to developers. One of the biggest tools in our kit is what we ask of developers when they come forward with new applications, how to mitigate the harm of new development on the natural environment. So I'm very happy to support this motion.
Councillor Fulk.
Thank you, Leader. Unfortunately, Councillor Peters isn't here with us this evening, and I'm sure he will be speaking up on behalf of his team within his portfolio, who work very hard on climate change. I would like to welcome Mark on board. He has presented us with an excellent plan in terms of our climate change action plan and how we're going to deliver it. And it shows that we just don't speak about this. We actually take action and are prepared to take the necessary action to deliver our climate change action plan by the time we have said we will do. And every member of this cabinet are right behind Mark and the work we're doing in climate change. And
thank you. I'd like to echo Councillor Allen's observations around the importance of inclusion of biodiversity, and obviously that's an important element that Mark has brought forward this evening. My only observation really is that the climate change emergency was declared by full council. So my personal feeling is that any change this evening should be, in this respect, should be a ratification by full council of including the ecological emergency within the recommendations. So, provided anybody else hasn't got any further comments, I shall make said recommendations. So, I'd like to propose the recommendations as set out in section 14. Subject to just that I just indicated. So the overall positive progress within the climate change action plan is noted. Changes are made to target dates. See actions 1.1, 2.2, 3.1, 12.5 in appendix 1. And that the climate emergency declaration is extended to a climate and ecological emergency declaration subject to ratification at the next available full council. And that the progress report is produced annually at the end of each financial year. Do I have a second? Councillor Fulk, thank you. All those in favour? That's unanimous from voting members. Thank you very much, Mark. Okay. So that takes us then on to item number 10, which is the Burton upon Trent Thames Bond Programme. I'm going to hand over to James. Can you see if you can move? The little minus on the left, I think that that's it. Perfect.
So I just take us through a short presentation to draw out the key points from the report that we received last week, and also provide an overview of each of the proposed projects. The purpose of the report shown in the document is to provide detail on the evaluation of the projects within the Task Force programme, to review and then consider the merits of these projects being submitted to government for progression. The important point to note is that the audit and the VFM scrutiny committee last week received a report and presentation on the Townsend programme. The purpose of that being to give opportunity for observation to be provided to members of the cabinet The view of the committee was essentially that the entirety of that discussion be provided to Cabinet. So with that in mind, the Democratic Services team draft minutes, which have been included in this report, along with questions and answers that have been submitted in advance of the meeting, but also the audio recording of the discussion has been made available through the Council's website in the way. So in terms of the full programme, back in December 2020, the Town Investment Plan was submitted to government proposing eight projects. There's been subsequently awarded £22.8 million and later clarified as being £23.8 million for delivery of seven projects, as you can see here. It also shows the allocated amounts of town's funding for each individual project. As you can see, Project D has been led by the Council, the Council, with the responsible organisations that have moved the projects. Column. It is worth noting that Project C has been deferred to September of this year due to the withdrawal of the University of Wolverhampton as the project sponsor, which happened in November. There's further information on that in paragraph 3.3 of the report. It's also worth mentioning that the Town Deal Board have agreed to remove Project F from the programme. In particular, it should be noted that the £7.18 million has been agreed by the Board, subject to formal government approval, to redistribute the funding to contribute to funding shortfalls in projects E, G, D, as well as settlements of the County Council's costs incurred in the development of Project F. Those amounts set out in paragraph 3.4. So we've received business case documents now for each of the five live projects. So that's taking out Project C and F, taking those two out of the equation, as you mentioned just a moment ago. A summary of each of the business cases has been provided as Appendix 2 to the report. The four business cases and all the supporting appendices have been listed in the report as background papers. As you might have gleaned from the executive summaries that have been circulated, we've taken the Treasury Green Book approach for considering business cases using the five-case model. So that's looking at strategic, economic, commercial, financial and management cases for each of the projects. So in order to do this, we took a Green Book compliant business case template and asked for that to be the basis of all the business case submissions. So that's allowed for a consistent approach to the proportion that we adopted in terms of both the submissions and also the evaluations. There's been a team of officers reviewing those cases, those business cases, since their submission. The approach we're taking really is to review the documents individually across the evaluation team before them coming together, collecting as a group to arrive at a consensus for each of those cases. And that's the process we've been through now for all the cases. And feedback has been provided as we've gone along to each of the project management projects. And then we're going back through that same process that we've described and to account for the clarification responses that we've received. We still have a small number of clarification questions still being responded to at present. But the evaluation outcomes, as it stands, have been set out in each project subsection of the report for each of the five cases, for each of the five projects. Along with a benefit cost ratio presented to us from each of those business case documents, and the overall assessment rate as well, applied using the assessment methodology that you can see set out in table 2 of the report, which you can see spanning pages 6 and 7 of the document. I'll pull those key points out as we go through the slides. Okay, so the next few slides touch on the specifics of each of the five projects. So we start with Project D. This is looking at the regeneration of the Riverside area of Burton Town Centre, focusing on the land between the High Street and the Oxford Wood Defences, which runs from Burton Bridge to the Garden of Remembrance. Project proposes to redevelop a significant area of the High Street, creating new community, leisure, recreation, residential, food and drink uses, which overlooks the Bottoms Enhancement Project area. So the business case provided indicates a benefit cost ratio of 1.5, I should say, to 1, which from deal of guidance would suggest the project represents acceptable value for money. We'll touch on the financial implications at the moment, but we're saying that Appendix 4 provides a summary of the capital implications. In terms of the consultation process, the proposals have been created by a 13-week iterative public consultation process, capturing three phases, so call for ideas phase, survey on options, ahead of the final proposal. That survey was hosted on the Commonplace consultation website, also involved online, paper and personal engagement, including a series of events and workshops. So the delivery of Project B is split into two phases, referred to as Phase 1B and Phase 2. As I mentioned, this is a council-led project, and it's worth noting that the town's funding is for Phase 1B, for those aspects that you can see listed here. So that includes the visitor centre conversion, Andrewson Passage enhancements, food hall, water tower and courtyard areas, some number of townhouses and key worker first homes, as well as card of members enhancements. So the funding for Phase 2 is separate to the town hall, but it will then be submitted to other funding sources, such as the Levy Lock Fund or the Shared Prosperity Fund. It's worth mentioning here as well, the project proposes the acquisition of the Molson Coors High Street campus on base terms, which have been attached as Appendix 3. It's also proposed that the final decision for purchase be delegated to the leader of the council and the deputy leader for the generation of that policy. And that would be in consultation with the leader of the opposition, the leader of the Alliance Group, and the chief executive. So in terms of project B costs, these are set out in the various tables you can see on the screen now. So the total project cost is expected to be around 22.6 million. The expected funding sources are delegation from the town's fund of 2.87 million. Then, as we mentioned earlier, a redistribution of 5.82 million, which is taken from the project's F project funding. There's opportunity for section 106 community sums allocations of £4 million, which leaves a further amount of 9.9 million for this to be delivered. And there's, as we heard earlier in the meeting today, the provision has been proposed in the MTFS coming to full council later this month, considering the implications of Project B. For further details, as I say, set out in Appendix 4, as well as Section 6 of the report, which has been circulated for this evening. But that last table there shows the profile to spend up to the 2025-26 year. Okay, Project E. This has been led by the County Council. This links closely to the High Street Linkages project, and is to create a library and enterprise hall for Burton, utilising the opportunities to provide a market or building. Proposes to utilise just under 7 million from the pots. The County Council have also agreed to provide a contribution of 1.067 million to Atenact, with a further 1.036 million being provided in Square, which is something that's been picked up to the Project F. So that proposal will look to community services and central hub in the town, the aim of encouraging a greater use of this area of the town centre, but also to enable those further redevelopment opportunities at the riverside through the High Street Linkages project. In terms of the benefit cost ratio, this has been presented in the business case as 2.3 to 1, in the business case evaluation, in case an assessment of medium in line with the assessment provided. Okay. Highlighting the business case is a legacy of skills, and the business case proposes an opportunity to do laws, improve the profile of the area while also reinvigorating them. Was part of the town's heritage through the market or landmark and driving footfall into the town centre. So the business case indicates the benefits of the proposed hub and how it's aligned to policy aspirations, such for example, skills and enterprise and the development agendas. Proposals looking to support local economic and social objectives and senior facilities transforming the market hall. As I mentioned, this project is an enabler for the High Street Linkages project. And the opportunities and benefits that brings as well. It's also been indicated that the hub would also cater as a business incubator space, providing a lot of facilities, and there are a number of examples shown on the screen here, such as Supercast broadband, on-site Bluetooth, printing capability, as well as community spaces, bookable spaces, such as. In terms of the consultation process here, there was a two-week consultation during October 2020 with 61 responses, of which 42% were in favour and 42% against, with 16% providing no comment. County Council also led a public consultation process across an eight-week period, running through July to September of last year. Again, that was online and hard copy in support of our member face-to-face engagement sessions. But in summary, 1,161 people completed the survey, 893, or about 77%, agreeing with the move. And that's something that's been, of course, factored into the evaluation. Linking back to Project D, it's worth mentioning that the number of the negative responses to the final Project D consultation were 100, with largely negative as a result of the position to the final project. Okay, so Project G, this is to undertake canal towpath improvements and has been led by the Canal and River Trust. The town's funding allocated to this project is just over 500,000, but the project is estimated to be around 700,000. Again, that's something that's been picked up by the Project F redistribution, not sure for there. The simple purpose of the project is to upgrade the surface of the towpath that runs along the Trenton Mersey Canal from the Branston to Shuttle Park areas. So it can be suitable all year round for cyclists and pedestrians to use, and really is to improve accessibility and connectivity. The business case has calculated the benefit cost ratio to be 2.6:1, and the business case evaluation case assessment of medium. We've also provided a couple of images here to show what the area is currently looking like. So you can see the conditions, but the business case is estimated there's a real potential for even more use in this area moving forward. So they're looking to upgrade the current surface, which, as you can see, is quite narrow and muddy and uneven. They're looking to replace that with a self-bind aggregate surface, which would then be suitable for year-round use by cyclists and pedestrians. The reason for the estimates for increased use is that there are a number of new housing developments around our proposed area, so we'll be subject to significantly more use within the next 5 years. And surface as it stands will no longer really be fit for purpose moving forward. So there's a real community benefit from improving the surface of those pathways. So for example, the business case indicating that the improvements will contribute to increasing physical exercise, to better access to less resources for cycling and running. Also contributes to the active travel agenda as well by improving connectivity of the town. So roads are looking to make it easier for people to walk or cycle to their destinations. And also linking into the national cycle. In terms of consultation, process undertaken in October 2020 showed 66% of respondents were supportive of Project B. However, prior to the delivery program, B should be forward, the Canal and River Trust will organise a further process through a walk-through public consultation to meet the public and actually walk specific routes. Also indicating in the business case that they will be engaging with other stakeholders, so they will be contacting user groups, so for example, any angling clubs in the area with fishing rights or boat users with mooring rights or any individuals or groups that might be temporarily affected by any of the proposed developments. Okay, so moving on to Project H, which is the second of the County Council-led projects, which really flows from the local cycling and walking infrastructure plan. The project is to undertake enhancements to the cycle network, utilising around 1.4 million from the town's plot. Proposal is looking to remove any barriers to cycling or walking, so again, improve connectivity through the town. To complement that, there will also be cycle parking installed at key locations in the area. In terms of the benefit cost ratio, that's been presented in the business case as 3.22:1, and the business case evaluation. Here's a summary of the proposed enhancements. So, steps fully segregated two way cycle route along Border Road to the railway station area. There'll also be wider connections, including improvements to the national cycle network and streets through residential areas. Safe environment will be created to allow cyclists to travel on the road. There will be enhanced crossing provision on the A511 with segregated connectivity to residential areas to the north. And as I mentioned, there will also be cycle parking provision installed at key destinations. On the indication there, as you can see, of the preferred design of parking. In terms of the consultation process, Proposals so far based on exercises undertaken as part of the local cycling and walking infrastructure plan and the active travel fund in the past couple of years. The business case indicates includes a proposal for further consultation on the detailed designs undertaken directly with local communities, but also through consultation in the traffic regulation process. So the final project has been led by Burton and South Derbyshire College, and this is to provide a specialist educational offer, utilising a little under £3 million from the Towns Fund Parts, and a small amount of match funding from the college and the as well. And their proposal is to develop a relevant curriculum delivered from new facilities at Burton to allow learners and employers to benefit from developing practices to help provide future workforce with skills relevant to the relevant needs of local industries. You can see a couple of images here, which will show what the facilities could look like. There's a floor plan there, that image on the left. But the business case has indicated that a cost ratio of 7. Again, the business case evaluation indicates an assessment of medium towards the high end. So as I mentioned, the project is to upgrade the college facilities in Burton, naturally to provide a state-of-the-art facilities, particularly in the area of health and social care and science, technology, engineering, arts and maths for STEAM. Their intention is really to work hand-in-hand with local employers and local businesses to ensure the facilities replicate real-world environments to get the best experiences from the curriculum. Then it really creates a talent pool, which can also help to attract the businesses into the area to help reshape the economy by helping the growth of a number of future-focused industry areas. So, for example, the analysis of needs and benefits in business cases showing that the areas of mechatronics, cybersecurity, digital games development are burgeoning sectors within the local area that they want to focus on. Finally, in terms of consultation, there's a 5-week public process held during September of last year. Through the work they've done in building the business case, we've been provided with a number of letters of support from 4 local schools as well as the local business based in Burton, citing things really like the benefits of this effective pathway through learning into local, as I've mentioned. Okay, so that's a run through of the projects and the evaluation outputs. Of course, there's further information set out in the main report and the associated dependencies. These are the 3 recommendations arising from the report, which won't necessarily read through at this stage, but it's worth mentioning that they're out of the report sections 12.1 to 12.3. With that, I'll hand back to you.
Thank you very much indeed, James. So Cabinet have obviously been variously involved in the Town Deal projects whole 2-year process, and obviously we've been regularly updated as the accountable body. Now we've obviously had and read the detailed business cases for review as well as the assessments which James has run through this evening. Obviously, members of Cabinet were either present at the scrutiny meeting last week or have listened to the recording in full. So, accepting as of course I do that some of the projects are not without their detractors or criticism, from a technical review perspective, which is what we're here to consider this evening, all of the projects have an overall rating of medium or high following the assessment, which makes them suitable for submission to government to release the funding. I will pass to members of Cabinet for questions and observations in a moment, but just a question I have first is around government's response thus far to the reallocation of Project F funding and how that would be considered in the context of the business cases being submitted, if that's how matters conclude this evening and after full council.
Okay, so as you've said, the evaluation is focused on the technicalities of the 5 market cases. Town Hall Board agreed in principle to reallocate the cost of mentioned, as well as the incurred costs that County Council of the Valley Tarpa project. We've been providing a form of unanimous state government to formalise that, but from conversations with Baines, that would be formally approved through that process that we're to go.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from members of coming? That's a full clap.
Thank you, Anita. Several observations with regard to this, and start off by saying that I'm delighted to be part of a team that has got the sufficient foresight and vision to actually welcome the opportunity to regenerate the town centre and the surrounds within Burton itself for connectivity, for employment, for upskilling, and for delivering something which will actually retain heritage assets such as the Market Hall, where its retention is very much in doubt without this. To go into a little bit more detail on that, what I would like to do is to look at Project E and suggest that the Library and Enterprise Hub, by moving into the Market Hall, and the Market Hall having a complete renovation to bring state-of-the-art facilities there, actually delivers two things for us. It delivers an up-to-date library with all the facilities that are within a library, but actually creating a community centre too, and also a business enterprise hub. And the reason I mention that is that in my experience as a college chair of governors at Tamworth and Lichfield, when we had the Lichfield University Centre built way back in the early 2000s, we had incubator units built within the university centre, which actually allowed students, as they progressed through their courses, to set up small businesses and be linked with the university centre with all the facilities that they were offering, as well as being linked with their tutors and mentors to actually help them with their business. What we're offering here with the Market Hall is the opportunity for new business entrepreneurs coming through from Burton and South Derbyshire College, going into these incubator units and having not just broadband, but super fast broadband, which you'll need for some of those gaming and STEAM facilities that are being provided by Burton and South Derbyshire College. And what better than to have them right next door to Burton and South Derbyshire College? They will have access to super fast broadband, they will have access to meeting rooms, they will have access to incubator units, which will be low cost for them to start their business, and they will have access to the college in terms of facilities within the college and the help and assistance of tutors who have started them off. In terms of the university project, which is being shelved, that is going to give us the opportunity to upskill dramatically in terms of our offer to all of our young people around the town. And we hear that places like Old Towers have got skills problems and cannot recruit because of skills problems. I saw an advert in by Openreach recently, are looking for apprentices for delivering Openreach super fast broadband facilities, and they're offering £25,000 a year to these apprentices, and they need this kind of facility that we are providing here to actually give them those opportunities to actually go for these jobs. In terms of our cycle network and the canal towpath, it gives us a connectivity. I have friends, I've moved to Branston, very close to the canal now, and I have discovered myself how awkward it is and how difficult it is to actually walk during muddy periods like we've got at the moment. And I would love to be able to walk from home up the side of the canal, across from Shobnal, and walk into work rather than bring my car. What better commitment for climate change than actually walk here rather than drive here? In terms of everything we're doing here, Project D, Project E, Project J, there is a synergy. And the other benefit by going forward with Project D and Project E facilitates the opportunity to actually have a visitor centre linked with the Wildlife Education Centre, with linked with a tourist centre right on the edge of the washlands. Our library will not offer that where it is. Our library will be much better off in the marketplace and attract visitors to the marketplace, which will actually reinvigorate our open market, our market. And we can actually rejig our library to actually be open to the washlands and encourage visitors to the washlands and be there as a washlands visitor centre, education centre. And it's in the right place to be able to do that. Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Fowler. I'll just make a slight correction on the word shelved. In terms of the university project, so it has obviously just been delayed.
Delayed, sorry, yes.
And I'm certainly very committed to ensuring that comes forward, because that is a really important part of the overall investment plan. Are there any other questions? Mike, sorry, Councillor.
Thank you, Leader. More of an observation than a question. When it was first, when moving the library into the market hall 2 years ago now, seems like forever ago, I wasn't overly enthused, as I think some people remember. Having said that, I'll keep an open mind. And over the last couple of years, I've been looking at the library and looking at the market hall. And although the market hall wasn't built as a library, it actually has all the features you'd expect in a library. Nearly every major library has a large central area where you put books, stacks and tables and all the rest of it, which it has. It has a high ceiling to give a feeling of space, which it has. And the other major feature that big libraries have is very good daylight. And you can't get much better lighting than a class roof. And for people of my age, having good daylight to read by is quite useful. If the refurbishment is done the right way, we will also have a stunning building, which will be interesting, might even be as interesting as the books. The other key thing is that it brings it all onto one floor. Now, I'm not thinking in terms of disability and mobility for that, although obviously to some people that's very important. But one of the disadvantages of the current library, and a lot of library designs, you go in there to get your Jack Reacher novel or whatever. But if you wouldn't then be saying, walking past a historical novel and say, Anne Boleyn, why you'd be reading the two at the same time, it's by the by. So they're like upstairs isolated. That way you could actually, you pass by. And I'm certainly looking forward in a few years' time, or at least a bit, of spending many a happy afternoon in that library. And I think it'd be better than the existing library, by hands down. And that's not taking into account the possible issues that may occur to the library if it remains its current location. So yes, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Councillor McCarthy, and I'll admit to being a secret Jack Reacher fan. Councillor Ashcroft.
I wanted to say such a lot that I think Councillor Faulkner and Councillor Medcalf have said it all, really. I think the only thing that I've got to say is, realistically, we've got to understand that in its present form, the market hall is definitely, it's just unsustainable. I've gone back many, many years and spent a lot of time with our officers looking back at all the incentives that have been tried, and there are so many going back to 2016. It's just phenomenal what everybody has tried, but unfortunately it's still in a decline. And as a whole, I think if you look at the project as a whole, I think this is an amazing opportunity for Burton, and one that we really shouldn't be missing out on.
Thank you. That's right.
Thank you. So our presentation was fairly lengthy, and I think that's a pretty full slide of recommendations, fairly reasonably small text, which I think goes to show just how much effort and work has gone into this so far, and we're only really just beginning. So I think Councillor Fortner, Councillor Ashcroft, Councillor Metcalfe have said quite a lot of points already. I've made a short statement here about the concerns that scrutiny committee had when I went to speak to them and talk to them through the project. I was very happy to attend scrutiny last Wednesday evening. We answered many questions on all of the projects. Scrutiny members paid special attention to projects D and E following large public interest, and I was pleased to talk about the positive steps we have taken, which enabled the public to shape the way the projects have developed.
For example, after the first round of consultations had concluded, it was very clear that residents did not want residential housing to play a big part in the Project D scheme, which is why I made a public statement ruling out any possibility of housing on the current library site. And the final scheme has only a small number of key worker homes which will be sold on the market at a reduced cost to first-time buyers, and reserved for those who have made the greatest contribution to our community during the COVID-19 pandemic. Other important views residents have put forward and we have listened to is how important the library service is, how valued the market hall as a building is as a heritage asset, and the importance of enhancing outdoor market. That is why I believe investing £8.2 million in the market hall building is the right thing to do, and by doing so, we save the current library service from a 50% reduction from what is currently planned. Over the next few months, ESBC will look into how we can enhance the current outdoor market, turning a small struggling market into a thriving marketplace, attracting new people from outside the town to both shop and hold a stall. Whilst we are making investment now, which will protect the building and library service for several decades to come, we are also mindful that the public expect ESBC as a local authority to protect the market hall in the long term, which is why we are seeking a covenant with Staffs County Council, which would give future administration at ESBC first refusal on whether to buy back the building for community use rather than allow it to be sold on the open market. In the unlikely event the library service does have to close, we are investing today and planning for the future. Levels of future borrowing were concerned for scrutiny, and rightly so. Previous administrations have borrowed money for which we are still paying back, and we need to be certain borrowing is justified. This is the greatest opportunity in the generation Burton has had to level up, and the government has been true to its commitment to invest in towns such as Burton. It is right that the local authorities now also commit to using every lever available to make the most of this cash injection. Whilst £10 million will be needed to realise Project D, the government is committing £7.8 million and will reuse £4 million of developer funds from recent new housing growth. The reality is that £10 million of local taxpayers' money will leverage an amount of over £22 million of investment. We will, of course, look into how this £10 million gap could be funded, but I believe this is a good use of council resources, even if ESBC needs to borrow it. The £10 million borrowing investment to council does not account for any income from the project, which could be used to offset the cost of the project. Any further external grant funding, which could mitigate the need to borrow, or any investment from the private sector, which could replace some of the council's own investments. The full package of interventions will increase connectivity across the town, reducing the need to use a car, reducing carbon emissions, limiting the impact on our climate change, and helping people to live healthy lives, expand further education opportunities, give the town a higher education venue, protect the market hall, bring massive transformational change to the heart of the town centre, establish a visitor centre, providing environmental education opportunities, and investing in the fantastic natural environment at the heart of the town centre. Protect and bring back to life historic buildings such as the town and bath houses. Build more homes for local families. Protect the library service and drive footfall in the town centre. As a local resident recently emailed me put it, it's a strong step forward for the community and the town in its regeneration and development plans. Congratulations go to ESBC and the Town Deal Board for making such positive actions and commitments in progress made so far. Credit where credit's due. There are many further aspects to huge investment, but I should save that for full council. Through Cabinet, elected members have overseen the progress alongside the Town Deal Board, which is led by local community members. But none of it would have been possible without officers' commitment and support. So I'd like to place on record my gratitude at this point for their efforts so far, to officers, and I look forward to working with them in the future to realise this fantastic opportunity.
you very much indeed, Councillor Allen. I was genuinely absolutely delighted when we were identified as one of the 100 towns to receive up to £25 million as part of the Stronger Towns Fund initiative. Just echoing George's words, I'd like to thank the Town Deal Board and the officers and all the support team for all their hard work that went into the investment plan that actually secured that investment. So that investment wasn't guaranteed. The investment was secured by the Town Deal Board, getting those plans together and getting a cohesive plan together which secured that investment from the government. So really that investment is unprecedented and it's a real opportunity for us to level up across education, skills, connectivity, heritage and tourism. And the projects are exciting and they do cohesively join up to offer real regeneration for Burton. So to that end, I would like to propose that having reviewed the programme and considered the business case assessment as listed in sections 5.7 and 5.8 of the report, as well as the observations of the scrutiny committee held on the 9th of February 2022, the Cabinet accepts the business cases for the projects being taken forward at this time, and that ESBC submit the summary document to the Department for Levelling Up Housing and Communities as detailed in the heads of terms. And I further propose that this decision is ratified by the next available full council. I propose that the Cabinet recommends to Council to agree the principle of the final decision to purchase the Motson Coors High Street campus property, utilising Town's Deal funding, being delegated to the Leader of the Council and the Deputy Leader for Regeneration and Planning Policy, in consultation with the Leader of the Opposition, Leader of the Independent Alliance Group and the Chief Executive. And lastly, I propose the Cabinet recommends to Council to agree to the principle of the final decision on the asset transfer of the Market Hall and Crossley House in exchange for the Burton Library property, being delegated to the Leader of the Council and Deputy Leader for Regeneration and Planning Policy, in consultation with the Leader of the Opposition, Leader of the Independent Alliance Group and the Chief Executive at the relevant time. Second for that, Councillor Allen. All those in favour. Thank you, that's unanimous, Andrew, from voting members. So, thank you very much indeed, everybody. That concludes the public part of the meeting. So, I will move that in accordance with Section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in view of the nature of business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there would be disclosed exempt information as